Some claim that the capital market is so efficient that it is not possible to beat it and therefore you should not even try. Is that true? And what are the pros and cons of passive investing? Those are the topics we're going to talk about in this episode. Welcome to Learn to Invest, a podcast by Money Masters with me, your host, Robert. Let's get started. Yeah, first of all, welcome, Scott. Our listeners are already familiar with you. It's nice to have you back. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Robert. Nice to be here.
Yeah, let's start with a question in your direction, Scott, if I may. So when people say that markets, capital markets are efficient, do you have any idea what does that actually mean?
I guess, first of all, my question back to you would be exactly how do we define capital markets? I kind of feel... Is it another term for stock market? Is it a subsection of the stock market?
Well, it's more than the stock market. It's basically the stock market, you could say, is a subsection or subcategory of the capital market. Capital is constantly flowing. It's running through different asset classes like stocks, real estate, gold, private equity, crypto, whatever. And also it's running through different sectors within the stock market. You have different industries, sectors, etc. And therefore, capital market is everything where capital is running through. And again, stock market is a subcategory of that. And the people who are participating in this capital market, of course, they want to achieve the highest profit for themselves, highest returns. And so they kind of, from their perspective, act in a rational way. Again, many people say that therefore the market is efficient. Do you have any clue, any idea what that means?
I would say that they average out to give you some sort of return in terms of efficiency, I guess. I mean, it's interesting to think about. I never heard this before, but I would imagine like it would average out to your advantage in some sort of way, perhaps.
So the idea of efficient markets is that all information that is available is priced in immediately. And especially talking about the stock market, information is very transparent. Of course, there is sometimes something called like insider information, but if people withhold this sort of information and maybe also take advantage of that, that's something which is illegal. So we're not talking about that usually. But in the normal case, all information is not only available to you, for example, as a single person, but it's available to everybody in the market. And therefore, the information is priced in immediately. So it's not possible to have an advantage over other market participants. That's the idea of efficient markets. So it's not possible to beat the market. Therefore, beating the market meaning that you will have an above average returns. Because if there's somebody who has an advantage, everybody else will see that as well, take advantage of that as well, and then the advantage will disappear immediately. But again, this really depends on the subsection of the capital market that we're talking about. As I said, the stock market is very transparent. If you compare it, for example, with the private equity market, it's not so transparent. So maybe the private equity market is less efficient than the public stock market. But let's focus maybe at the moment on the stock market. So again, the question is it true that the stock market is so efficient that it's not possible to beat the market in this case? But it seems like you never heard about this idea of efficient markets and all information being priced in immediately. Is that true?
I mean, it's interesting. I guess maybe I never thought about it that way. It is very interesting, though. But and also the angle on the insider trading, how that's the illegal side. But then as I heard you talking to this and when we're talking about the stock market, it almost made me feel like somebody's cheating somehow by withholding the information to some degree to a particular time that suits them well in some kind of way. But I'm very interested in hearing about this point, though. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, probably it does happen that information is held back in some cases, but again, that would be illegal. So probably that's not the normal case. Yeah, but let's look at this a little bit about this. Let's talk about a little bit about the market being efficient. There's something called the efficient market hypothesis. So that's a theory that probably the majority of the people believe in. Yeah, the majority of the people believe that markets are efficient and it's not possible, therefore, to beat it. But let's look at it in detail. Let's look at the science, the studies, to see if that's actually true or not. Because actually, there's something called market anomalies. So basically, some factors that you can use to beat the market. I give you some examples. For example, size is a market anomaly, meaning that companies or yeah, stocks, companies with a smaller market capitalization oftentimes tend to outperform larger companies. Then there's calendar effects. For example, stocks that are up in January or that are strong in January tend to outperform throughout the rest of the year, something like that. Low book value. Companies with a low book value tend to outperform. Low liquidity. Liquidity means basically the price multiplied with the volume. So how many shares are being traded? Low liquidity tends to outperform high liquidity. Value, yeah, the valuation of a company. If a stock is has a low valuation, that's something which is considered to be a good thing. Yeah, that seems to make it possible to outperform in the next couple of months and years. Momentum is another thing, kind of related to a trend, you could say. Emerging markets, sometimes tend to outperform. Mean reversion is another market anomaly. Quality, low beta, which is volatility, earning surprises, etc. So probably many more than those. Those are just some examples of those market anomalies, those factors that tend to make it possible to have an above average rate of return. I'd like to add one more thing, which is small account edge, meaning that if you have a small account, a small capital, it gives you possibilities to outperform other market participants with a larger capital, which is just logical because I just said that, for example, low liquidity is a market anomaly. So if you have a small account, then it's easier for you to get into stocks with low liquidity, yeah. Whereas market participants with high capital, for them, they have to focus on the large caps, yeah. They're very liquid, large companies, and therefore they cannot take advantage of those particular market anomalies. So again, to summarize, there are market anomalies that make it possible to beat the market, and this is actually not being debated. Yeah, there's no discussion about whether these market anomalies exist or not. It's proven in science. However, what people still discuss about is why those market anomalies exist. And I just mentioned the so-called efficient market hypothesis. This camp, let's call it, is saying that the reason why market anomalies exist is not because the market is not efficient, but because those market anomalies only exist because of risk premium. So whenever you for example, use size as a market anomaly. Yeah, again, I said that smaller companies tend to outperform larger companies at times. Then that's only because smaller companies are more risky, they say. Yeah, and yeah, the same applies to other market anomalies. There's always a risk related to them, and that's why you get a higher return, but you have to take on a higher risk as well. However, there's another camp in science, not only the efficient market hypothesis camp, but also a camp called behavioral economics. And yeah, the famous people, for example, of the efficient market hypothesis, one person is called Eugene Farmer, and behavioral economics, very famous, is Robert Shiller. Both got a Nobel Prize in 2013. I think a third person got a Nobel Prize. And actually, they gave the Nobel Prize in the same year to both camps. Yeah, because it's not really decided yet which one's right, which one's correct. However, they just decided to give the Nobel Prize to both camps. And the behavioral economics camp is saying that markets are not efficient, and because market participants are human beings, and therefore human beings are subject to psychology, and the psychology makes them not being rational at all times, and therefore sometimes the market is not efficient, to summarize it. Now let's go to the idea of passive investing. Because the efficient market hypothesis supporters, of course, they will say that the only thing rational would be to do passive investing, to not even try to beat the market. Yeah, because it's not possible. So why should you try? But even other people who maybe are not like 100% fan of the efficient market hypothesis might still decide on taking this passive approach. But let's first talk about what exactly is passive investing. Passive investing means to take a, for example, global stock portfolio made up of ETFs usually, and to invest steadily without ever redeploying the invested capital. One could do this actually with one single ETF based on the MSCI All Country World Index, which covers the whole global stock market. Briefly, what exactly is an ETF, exchange traded fund? What does that mean? An ETF is a fund that can be easily bought and sold at the stock market, just like a single stock. Yeah, so it's you don't have to talk to a fund manager or whatever. You can just go online and decide right away to buy it, to sell it. And the difference to a traditional mutual fund, for example, is that mutual funds, they have fund managers who are actively deciding on what to put into the fund and whatnot, whereas an ETF is simply replicating the price movement of an underlying, which is oftentimes an index. Yeah. So again, I was talking about the MSCI All Country World Index. So if you have an ETF which is based on that, and the index goes up 10%, then the ETF will go up 10% as well. Yeah. Because there are many indexes, there are many ETFs, and yeah, it's a very broad market. So now let's talk about advantages and disadvantages of passive investing in ETFs. First of all, advantages. So with this strategy, this approach, you will probably get an okay performance. Again, I said last time that the global stock market historically had a rate of return of 8% per year, and the US market even 10% per year. Also, it's possible to diversify very broadly. You could spread the risk very broadly because in one ETF, let's say you have an ETF based on the S&P 500, there are 500 companies in that. You can also diversify across countries. Yeah. So it's a very broad diversification with even just a single or maybe two or three ETFs. And it's a very easy strategy to implement. Yeah. Again, you could do it even with one single ETF. It doesn't take a lot of time to implement. It can be done even more or less automatically with a share saving plan. And there are very low costs associated with ETFs because they have no portfolio manager, no fund manager, as I said before. So the TER, total expense ratio, oftentimes is as low as 0.05% to 0.5%, whereas traditional mutual funds that are actively managed have a TER of maybe 0.5% to 2.5%. So those were the advantages of passive investing in ETFs. Now let's talk about the disadvantages. I just said the performance is okay, but on the other side, you could say it's only average. Yeah, performance will always be only average. And even though you can spread the risk across many single stocks and countries, etc., investing in ETFs is still related to, or there's still a lot of risk, there's serious risk related to passive investing. Because if you look at broad indexes like the S&P 500, MSCI, All Country World Index, etc., you will see that at times the index is in a drawdown of even more than 50 or 60%. For example, look at the time, the year 2000 to 2013. More than a decade, the market was basically going sideways. And within that decade, it had a drawdown of 50, 60% twice. So for those people who are doing passive investing, they didn't really get anywhere in that decade. And they had a very severe roller coaster ride, basically. It's emotionally very difficult to stick to your strategy in those times. And probably most people won't be possible or won't be able to do it. And to reduce this risk, many people use a permanent portion of bonds in their portfolio. Yeah? So there's stocks and there's bonds. Bonds, they will reduce the risk. However, they will also reduce the rate of return of the overall portfolio. And when looking at the MSCI All Country World Index, you will see that more than 60% of its market capitalization is in US stocks. So in times when the US market outperforms the rest of the world, that's a good thing. But in other times, this is a bad thing. And yeah, of course, when the US market outperforms the rest of the world, it would be even better to be in US stocks with 100% of your capital. Scott, back to you. Tell me, do you own ETFs yourself? Have you ever bought ETFs?
I think so. I mean, I have a small portfolio. I mean, just like a standard in my brokerage account. frankly, I'm not a pro, but I believe I have, some ETFs in there, individual stocks. Index funds, is that like an ETF, right? Like the S&P index, that's an ETF.
Yeah, again, an ETF usually tracks an index or replicates an index. And therefore, if you have an index fund, it's probably going to be an ETF, yes.
So let me just say maybe, because I'm not a pro. But this is all very interesting for me, though. I do have a small, relatively small, I don't have $1 million in it, but just trying to learn, and some of what you're saying here is something I can definitely take away and think about. But let me get back to you on the ETF, and let me just say maybe for now.
But you don't remember how you decided on picking that exact index fund?
No, I don't think it's more like if the market's down and I look at something. I mean, some of the technology sectors are very interesting. You know, even you and I worked in semiconductor area for some time. That's a very tricky market. I've invested in some semiconductor type index funds, or I guess it's an ETF, because it's a group of things bundled into one and within the a non-efficient, non-tax efficient account. Within the brokerage space.
Yeah, okay. Well, just to give you a quick spoiler, in a later episode of this podcast, we will talk about how one could set up an ETF portfolio that is not completely passive, still kind of passive, but not 100% passive, but still very easy to implement and also does not require a lot of time, maybe just 5 minutes a month to implement. And this portfolio will double the rate of return compared to the MSCI All Country World Index, and at the same time, strongly reduce the risk. This is something we will talk about later. Also, for the audience out there, please keep on listening to this podcast so you don't miss out on this special strategy.
I look forward to it.
All right. So, that's basically all I have for this episode today. Or Scott, is there anything you would like to add, or should we just wrap it up?
Nope, it sounds good to me. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Please subscribe. Please give us a positive rating. May the momentum be with you. See you next time. Bye bye.